Now we're recording. My name is Christopher Strebe, and I am here with Tina Jordan and Elise Schrader. The date is April 7th, 2021. The time is 12 p.m. Central. Tina is in Judah, Wisconsin. Elise is in Indianapolis, Indiana, and I am in Janesville, Wisconsin. Tina, I'd like to briefly review the informed consent and deed of gift document that you signed. This interview is for the COVID-19 Oral History Project, which is associated with the Journal of the Plague Year, a COVID-19 archive. The COVID-19 Oral History Project is a rapid response oral history project focused on archiving the lived experiences of the COVID-19 epidemic. We have designed this project so that professional researchers and the broader public can create and upload their oral histories to our open access and open source database. This study will help us collect narratives and understandings about COVID-19, as well as help us better understand the impacts of the pandemic over time. The recordings, demographic information, and the verbatim transcripts will be deposited in the Journal of the Plague Year, a COVID-19 archive, and the Indiana University Library System for the use of researchers and the general public. Do you have any questions about the project that I can answer?
I do not.
Taking part in the study is voluntary. You may choose not to take part, or you may leave the study at any time. Leaving the study will not result in any penalty or loss of benefits to which you are entitled. Your decision whether or not to participate in the study will not affect your current or future relations with Indiana University, IUPUI, or the IUPUI Arts and Humanities Institute. Participating in this project means that your interviews will be recorded in digital video and or audio format and may be transcribed. The recordings and possible transcriptions of my interviews, copies of any supplementary documents or additional photos that you wish to share, and the informed consent and deed of gift may be deposited in the Journal of the Plague Year, a COVID-19 archive, and the Indiana University Library System, and will be available to both researchers and the general public. Your name and other means of identification will not be confidential. Do you have any questions?
I can't think of any.
All right, a little bit more here. In addition to your signed document, would you please offer a verbal confirmation that you understand and agree to the following terms? I am asking that you verbally confirm that you have agreed that your interview will be made available under the following license. The Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, Share Alike 4.0 International, CC BY-NC SA 4.0. Moreover, do you agree?
I agree.
And that's what you signed off. Finally, I want to ask for a verbal confirmation that you have agreed that your interview will be made available to the public immediately. Do you agree?
Yes.
All right. That's all that we have for that. So let's get into the questions here. So if you could you tell me a bit about, you know, what are the primary things you do on a day-to-day basis? What's your life like?
Well, I have multiple different jobs. I work as a paramedic on an ambulance service in southern Wisconsin. I also am a full-time faculty at the technical college training EMS students. And occasionally I teach advanced cardiac life support and pediatric advanced life support to the staff at one of the hospitals here in Wisconsin. So typically, you know, my full-time job is at the technical college, but I run at least one day a week as a paramedic on our local ambulance. And I am also on the small community fire and first response unit here in my hometown.
That's Judah?
Yes.
Judah, yes. So that gets to get. So where do you live, and what is it like to live there? What is it like in Judah?
Here in Judah, it's very, very rural. We have one small school with probably 300 students in the whole K-12 district. So it's a very, very rural area. And the thing that was very interesting during the whole COVID situation is I have three children and all of my children work in healthcare at different facilities. And my husband is also an essential worker and he is on our volunteer fire department.
You mentioned he's an essential worker. That is because he's with the fire department.
He's a volunteer on the local fire department, but he works for a municipality as a mechanic for the street department. So he never stopped working during the whole pandemic either.
So when you first learned about COVID-19, what were your thoughts about it? And then, if you will, how might your thoughts have changed over time?
Well, it seemed like it all happened so fast. We were on break from the technical college, and I was on spring break visiting with my friend, her family in Arizona. So when I first left at the beginning of the week to go to Arizona, it felt to me like COVID was something you were just starting to hear about on the news. It wasn't really here in Wisconsin, or so it felt at the time. And when we went through multiple airports, there were only a couple people who were wearing masks. And by the end of the week, we were getting all these emails from the technical college that we were going to shut down for a few days until we figured out how to teach a lot of these classes online. And basically in just a few days, the whole, the whole academic world changed at the technical college. And we weren't allowed to have face-to-face classes for a couple of weeks. By the time I got back and I went back to working on the ambulance, we were very, very concerned about COVID. We were, disinfecting everything. We were wearing, full PPE. We were wearing masks on every call. We would designate one person to go into the home, and we responded and approached the patient, have the patient put on a mask and immediately take the patient's temperature and see if they had a fever and start asking, questions about if they potentially had been exposed to COVID. So any patient who had any type of respiratory problems, we treated as if they could have COVID. As far as the ambulance, it was crazy at first because there wasn't enough personal protective equipment for everybody. And we were literally wearing plastic rain ponchos for gowns because that's all we could get. When things first started, as the N95 masks that the healthcare workers were wearing were hard to come by. So we wore the same one for up to 8 hours or 8 patient contacts. So we would wear those until they started to fall apart or they weren't effective anymore because they were so rare and hard to find. As far as the school was concerned, we started having face-to-face classes again after a couple of weeks. We would have the students wear masks and protective eyewear, take their temperatures as as they came into the classroom, we had to teach the new EMTs that were going out into the workforce these skills that we were unable to teach them online. So we would have social distancing with small groups. We would be disinfecting everything after each practice session. And we lost all of our clinical sites for all of our students. So normally our students go into the emergency room and do certain skills with, in a certain number of hours in the emergency room, and all the hospitals stopped taking students. So the state, well, first of all, the governor said that even though schools, the technical colleges were closed for face-to-face contact for most programs, there was an exception made in that spring semester for students who were in police, fire, EMS type of training. Nursing came later. So there were, many students who were actually set to graduate that May that weren't able to graduate on time for other programs. But we were lucky because the governor made that exception for protective services, public safety type employees. So what we ended up doing is we ran our human simulators in scenarios from 8 a.m. to 10 p.m., 5 or 6 days a week, with a whole fleet of lab instructors. So students would come in and they would literally pretend they are in an emergency room environment, and they would go through that simulated training, and it took a lot of manpower and a lot of time, but we were able to get all of our advanced EMT students and all of our EMT students through that clinical component. Our Department of Health made an exception during the pandemic that students would be able to do that clinical experience in high fidelity simulation at the college rather than in the ER, so those students could get into the workforce in a timely manner. So those were very interesting times. So although as the semester, we did a summer semester, fall semester, and now here we are a year later, we're sending students back into the emergency room again now. But as far as having more content online and smaller groups learning those hands-on skills and everyone still wearing a mask, we're still in that mode. We were able to get all of our students finally now, a year later, all of our students that are going into the clinical setting were able to receive the COVID vaccine. I was lucky enough that I received my COVID vaccine because I work on the ambulance about the same time as the emergency room staff received it. So we were pretty much in that first group of people. Things seem to be now much more relaxed and less fearful than they were a year ago with the vaccine rolling out. It was, once I received my second vaccine, I felt like a huge weight had been lifted off of me, and there was a lot less worry. We worried a lot simply because the people here in my home working at different healthcare facilities that we were all getting exposed and we were all taking care of patients that were potentially COVID patient or known COVID patients. So then because we all worked at different facilities and we would all come back home here with each other, that we were going to expose one another. So we were very, very careful, maybe a little germophobic sometimes. So that was interesting as well, just because, you know, we literally had in one home people who were providing health care in an emergency setting to patients from three different environments, you know, coming back to our home every day. I personally would get very, very frustrated. It got to a point where I needed to just stay away from social media because there were so many people saying that COVID was political, that COVID wasn't real, that, getting the COVID vaccine would be dangerous. And I was seeing patients who had COVID-19 firsthand. And it was very real. When our local hospital had patients who were really, really ill that had to go to a larger city for, you know, better care or more, I should say, higher level care in the bigger city, our ambulance service was transporting those very, very ill patients from one hospital to another. So I had seen COVID firsthand. I saw it happen to people who were much younger than me, and it was very, very real in my eyes. So it felt disrespectful to me that people that I knew were saying, oh, it's just the flu. It's not that big of a deal. Everyone's overreacting. That was difficult to see people that I knew ignoring safety measures and going out to local places and refusing to wear a mask. So I just had to distance myself from that and continue to do my job. So I never really worked from home like some of my friends that work in office jobs. So it seemed, still to this day, it seems weird to me when people say, oh, yes, I've been working from home for an entire year, because everyone in my home continued to work every day, and that didn't change for us. The other thing I wanted to mention is when we were at the technical college and we were training people.
And that, if I may, that's Black Hawk Technical College, right?
Yes.
Just for the interview purposes. Okay, in Janesville, Wisconsin. Yes.
So when we were training people, all of our part-time staff there work either in emergency rooms or on ambulances. So I counted it up one day, and we literally, with our staff members, our part-time staff members that we had there, we had people from five different counties that would come there to work, and all of us were working in healthcare. And, you know, we were very, very careful as far as wearing protective equipment and hand washing and disinfecting. And not a single one of our part-time employees, when we were running all those simulations and training in those hands-on skills, not a single one of our employees contracted COVID, which I think mostly comes because we had a group of people who were very knowledgeable about infection control and took it seriously.
How would you say, so COVID-19 has affected your like day-to-day activities and at home, outside of the workplace, you know, interacting with family or, you know, recreational activities?
Well, during this whole pandemic, my father became very, very ill, and he was in the hospital for 19 days in November. So I knew that I had to help my parents out with different things And, you know, everyone in my home would have to help the grandparents out with different things. So we took advantage of online shopping and, you know, delivery and, you know, grocery, online grocery shopping and pickup. But I was constantly, like the other people in my family, I was constantly worried that I was going to accidentally give COVID to my parents. And at that point, I knew that if my dad caught COVID, that there would not be a good outcome. So we had no Thanksgiving, no birthdays, no Christmas. And just this past weekend, everyone in my family, including my sister and my parents, every single one of us have been fully vaccinated, and we were able to have our first family get together for Easter. And it was wonderful to see the joy that that brought my parents, that we could finally all be together again and everyone was well.
So that, you know, so it really affected how you associated with people during that time. Or so, like, how about communication? You know, was it just, did you talk on the phone? Would you perhaps do Zoom meetings with family members to stay in touch? Or how did you keep contact?
We did try to do some FaceTime. It was very interesting with my parents because they would struggle a little bit with the technology. But they got pretty good at it after a while, but every once in a while it would get a little frustrating. We'd have to like get on the landline telephone and say, "No, Mom, click here." And we were able to, you know, wear a mask, go to their house, drop things off, or, you know, do some errands for them, or, you know, stack some firewood for them or something and keep that social distancing. You know, so we did see them from a distance and, you know, continue to check on both sets of grandparents during the whole long year. But, you know, it was sad to see them be lonely, and you know, but we were able to get them set up where they were able to, you know, watch church online and some other things that they enjoy to do. But they too were, you know, definitely isolated from things that they really loved to do, and that was sad to see.
You mentioned, you know, loneliness. Like what ways have you seen, or do you think that, you know, COVID-19 has affected people's like mental health as well as like their physical health?
I think everyone that I talk to, or so it seems like most people I talk to, complain that they gained weight during the COVID pandemic from the change in their lifestyle. I feel in some ways families were able to connect a little bit more, stay home with their kids instead of doing a lot of running everywhere to sporting events and always being on the go, and play board games, get to know each other a little bit more individually, because we all had to slow down a little bit in different ways. So around here, it was interesting because the last summer, the gardening centers were sold out on everything, because people who had never tried gardening before were trying gardening, and people were going to parks and buying kayaks and things they normally had not tried before. So in some of those ways, it was good, but I also know some high school students who were seniors who had their world turned upside down with their senior year and graduation and events that would have been their last band concert or their last season of softball. And to them at that age, it's super, super important. And I watched them struggle, and I think there were a lot of tears for certain groups over milestones that were missed.
You mentioned like people maybe changing up their recreational habits or trying new, maybe picking up hobbies. Did you try anything new, you know, recreationally, or did it change how you spent your free time, you know, just living during this pandemic?
I really did not try anything new simply because I was working harder than ever because of the ambulance and all of the changes that were going on at the technical college, and just trying to keep up with those demands. I felt like I was away from home and busier than I had been previously simply because of my profession.
If you want, let's talk a bit about the community as a whole in Judah and around where you live. Just how would you say, the pandemic, COVID-19, has affected the community kind of as a whole?
There were some people who made COVID very political, and there were some divisions caused because of it. We had people locally who refused to wear a mask, which caused confrontation with other people in the community. That was very sad to see. It was hard because people couldn't get together and do their social events. However, some groups of people still got together and had their social events mocking the social distancing and the mask precautions. So that caused some hard feelings. I listen to the people in the church community and some of the organizations that do a lot of fundraising. They struggled. And I think the group of people that I feel most sad for are the family members who lost loved ones during the pandemic and couldn't hold traditional funerals and visitations. I definitely think that affected their grieving process. And even just watching whether, you know, it was someone who was hospitalized for a non-COVID reason, to not be able to have visitors or only be able to have one visitor was difficult for families and for friends. I know people who had newborn babies and couldn't have visitors, and that probably affected people more than we think. It's hard to say. And I'm interested in seeing 5-10 years from now what the total impact was on all of these changes that occurred. And with learning too, from people who are in pre-K all the way up through people working on master's degrees, did the change in the learning format have a good impact or a bad impact, or a neutral, was it, about the same as far as the progression of learning with the delivery changing?
You'd mentioned some groups in your community, they held events. They're like mocking the distancing guidelines. Has there been since the beginning, have you seen a change overall in the general attitudes or day-to-day opinions of people in the community, or if things perhaps kind of stayed the way they've been for a while? As more information has come through and more people have slowly been contracting it.
It seems that as a whole, people simmered down some after the election. And I'm not sure if it was because some people viewed the pandemic as being more of a political issue, or if people about that time got to a point where they were starting to accept things. And that also came at a point where we could see the light at the end of the tunnel because the vaccines were rolling out. But even with the vaccine rolling out, there are still people that I encounter weekly that have some really interesting views about the vaccine and the government, and they don't research the science behind the vaccine. So I wish people would educate themselves more about pandemics and vaccines.
Could you go a little bit more into detail? What are some of these views that people have that, you feel may be, misguided, or that people should do more research into things?
I have heard everything from computer chip tracking devices to the vaccine is going to cause infertility and birth defects, and that it was released before it was studied thoroughly. I've heard that it contains chemicals that are poisonous and cancer-causing, and when you start to have conversation with these people about the science, they don't understand how the vaccine is designed. And usually I find that it's like talking politics or religion with people. You just have to let that go because they are already pretty set in their ways and they don't want to learn more about it. And everyone has a choice. Everyone has a choice whether they want to receive the vaccine or not. And that is their choice. But I don't feel it's right for them to push their opinion on to someone else, or that they are in a situation where they may endanger my family with their beliefs.
You'd mentioned the election, and maybe we can talk a bit about leadership. How have you your local leaders in the community and officials, how have they responded to the outbreak? How do you think they did? Or maybe how has their response changed within your community?
I had mentioned that at first it was really difficult to obtain the proper personal protective equipment. People really rallied. We had groups that were sewing disposable or washable gowns and hair covers. We had many masks, homemade masks that were donated. There were also groups that maybe were in remodeling or construction that had the N95 mask available that shared them with the healthcare workers. People who had things donated to fire, EMS, the emergency room staff, that was awesome. So there was a lot of support that way. It seemed like the policies of how to handle everything pandemic related was constantly changing on a weekly basis. Our county health department,
that's Green County, correct? In Wisconsin. Yeah. Okay.
They did a good job of, you know, communicating with everyone. So things, you know, trickle down from there to the ambulance services and the first responders. As far as statewide, we went, you know, as you know, we went back and forth a couple of times with, you know, okay, it's mandated everyone has to wear a mask, or locally, this is going to happen with rules and restrictions on restaurants. And then a couple of days later, there'd be a whole legal battle and someone would overturn it. And I would just think, for crying out loud, people just, you know, do the right thing. In my mind, wearing a mask and social distancing was very simple. But then you would go to the store and there'd be someone standing in the store arguing with an employee because they refused to wear a mask, and it was unnecessary conflict, in my opinion. But now we're back to, you know, people have the right to do what they feel is best, but you have to wear a shirt and shoes when you go into the store too. So people who own their own businesses also have the right to say, this is how I want people to be cautious when they enter my business. And, you know, there again too, there was unnecessary conflict that occurred in those situations.
Do you have any thoughts more on like how, like statewide or even national level, like how there's just been differing responses? Do you think like the responses over time, like just based as really the world is learning about this, like, do you think things have gotten better, or is there still a lot that more that maybe you think needs to be done or that can be handled a lot better in regards to like policies and guidelines?
Yeah. In the beginning, it was interesting to me how the need for the PPE and the rollout was so different in different parts of the country. Even the vaccine rollout seems to be different in different parts of the country. If you look at things globally, now we are in a place where we are immunizing young adults that probably are not high risk, where in other parts of the world, we still have older population that is a higher risk that haven't received their vaccine. I don't know the right answers or how to make all of that happen. There's a lot of moving parts that need to be involved. So I don't really have suggestions on how to make it better, but there are some things that seem to be a little just just disorganized yet.
You mentioned a bit ago, just like local businesses, you know, or how, you know, like a business owner, especially, you know, their own business, like they have a right to set certain policies. And so there's a chance, like, how have you seen within your community, how has the pandemic just affected businesses as a whole, you know, during this life? Because things were really thrown, you know, like lockdown orders and all that had a big effect on a lot of businesses. So I'm wondering what your experience with that was or is.
It seems the hardest hit were the bars and restaurants, that type of business. The people that I know really went out of their way to support carry out, to support the local businesses, the local shop owners, the small business owners, to try to, you know, shop local, get carry out. I know some of the businesses still struggle just because the cost of providing carry out meals was very expensive compared to eat in. I know employment wise, many people who worked in those environments are still not back to work at their regular hours pre-pandemic.
So during this whole crisis, seems like a lot, like there's a lot of it has to do with information, what information is getting out or to whom, or, you know, what information are people listening to and maybe others that they're ignoring. So like, if we could talk a bit about that, like what have been your primary sources of news during the pandemic? And has that changed at all?
First of all, the people who have probably the most unscientific information are the people who are getting all of their news off of social media. And that is a whole problem on its own. I tried to be very, very factual. I tried to read the science on everything and, you know, read the updates that were coming from the CDC, the information that was coming from the state and local health departments, and stay off of social media. And, you know, I even tried a couple times. You know, I was really busy, so I guess it wasn't really a challenge, but I tried to stay away from watching national news in the morning or in the evening, because it seemed to suck the life out of me. So if I just stuck to the numbers and the facts, then, you know, the COVID numbers that were presented each day, read the science, I felt like I was much better informed than listening to the parts that the media wanted me to focus on.
Like, so do you think that then that there were important issues that the media was not covering?
I think the media covers what attracts viewers and not necessarily the good and the bad equally.
If we can move a bit and maybe talk about, I guess, looking forward, do you think your experiences, like, have they transformed how you think about your friends or your family, or your community?
I think those of us who work in healthcare, because of the stress and the worry that in the extra work that the pandemic caused, it probably brought those people closer together as coworkers. I you know, I think there is such a division between the healthcare workers, frontline workers, essential workers, and the other group that it was hard for the two different groups to understand each other. My circle or my bubble during the entire pandemic for the entire last year was my healthcare worker friends and my EMS instructors at the technical college. And I really didn't get to see anyone else or socially interact with anyone else. So that became my bubble. And, you know, there's friends I haven't seen for a very, very long time because of the pandemic. And I think it changed my circle of friends a little bit.
Do you think that circle will remain the same as it is now, or perhaps it'll kind of move back to what it was pre-pandemic, or how do you see that?
I think it will. I think, you know, when you start having hobbies and interests and people start going out and about again, that it will shift again.
How does this pandemic like compare to other big events that have happened in your lifetime? Like just in terms of like how it's just impacted your life or how you see the world.
I think I would like to see the world take better care of each other country-wise, not every country for itself. I think we could be more united and get things done, and this is a very good experience. I think we should have, could have looked at the way other countries were handling the pandemic when they were in the thick of it before we were here in the United States. I for myself being older, found it interesting when I would look at my students at the technical college who were in their 20s. This is like the first major thing that they ever had happen. So some of them were like the sky is falling and needed a lot of reassurance. You know, they were too young to remember 9/11. They were too young to remember Desert Storm or, you know, any of the conflicts that have happened military-wise. So they seem to need a lot of reassurance because they have never lived anything negative before. And I thought that was a very, very interesting perspective from the older generation to the younger generation. And now I'm making myself sound really old, but they handled it a little bit differently and with more panic than the people who are a little bit more mature.
So you're saying, like, were you able then to sort of look back at previous major events and somehow pull, just having lived through those, like you could pull certain lessons to apply to this, just to, like you said, the sky isn't falling.
Well, in those situations, you just have to take things day by day, week by week, just encounter what is directly in front of you, and in time all things will pass. And for my students that were in their 20s last spring, one day they had normal traditional learning, the next week they had, oh, COVID is coming, there's no school this week, the next week was, okay, we're, you know, going to meet online. The next week it was, okay, now you've lost all of your clinical sites for your experience. And, you know, in their world, it was about, oh my gosh, am I going to graduate on time? Am I going to be able to finish this class? I don't understand some of, you know, this delivery when we went to online lecture, they had to learn to be more self-motivated, self-directed than coming and sitting in a classroom and someone telling them every move to make. So it became more for some of them, it became more about what's going to happen to me, where I think the older generation thinks about, you know, what's going to happen to all of us.
Like, how about, like, your parents, how, like, generally speaking, like, how have they handled it overall? I mean,
I think they, you know, in addition to feeling isolated, I think they felt worried. I think they, you know, spent a lot of time worrying about all of their kids and grandkids that were working in healthcare. And there again, too, they may have watched the news too much and, you know, caused a little additional worry because, you know, there's not enough social activity going on to balance your world out. I think they, you know, they've ended up taking up a lot more crafts and quilt making and woodworking and things because they refer to it as I grounded them. I grounded my parents and they weren't allowed to leave home. The other thing I wanted to mention in our rural community, with us being so rural and everything going to a huge content of online delivery for education, we have very unpredictable, slow internet in our rural areas. There were many students, college level and grade school level, high school level, who did not have computers, or their family had one computer and a parent needed it for working from home, or, you know, they didn't, you know, some of the more, you know, there's families here that definitely live at a poverty level who did not have a computer or did not have internet. So it was sad to see that situation, because how do we accommodate their learning needs? Blackhawk Technical College started giving out, you know, for students to borrow Chromebooks and laptops. They did a hotspot in the parking lot, and a lot of the same things happened here at the local school districts. But you still can't have multiple people working from home on an internet that doesn't have a lot of data exchange going on. That was definitely problematic and needed, a lot of people needed to gain a lot of patience to get through that challenge. We had a lot of school employees, public school employees, not the technical college school, but public school employees that still went in to school every day and put together sack lunches to send home or, you know, deliver for families who, for the kids that definitely needed that lunch provided every day by the school.
When you mentioned, like, being in a rural area, do you feel that there are ways that the pandemic has just affected rural communities differently or specifically as opposed to, like, the country as a whole or to more urban or suburban, more densely populated areas?
Well, because we are so rural and we have less people, we had less exposures. We per capita had less COVID. So in that aspect, it's probably better than living inner city where there's more people in an area. I never left the rural area the whole time, so it's hard to compare.
I understand. I guess we can end on, you've been through this. We've all been through, about a year of this pandemic, this lockdown or whatever. How do you imagine your life? What do you imagine it looking like a year from now? Or what do you imagine life being like a year from now?
I imagine that we will go back to large, gatherings of larger gatherings of people a year from now. But I think in the healthcare industry, the masks are here to stay. I think we're probably going to be wearing masks as healthcare workers for a very, very long time. I think that's just going to be our norm. A lot of things that we've done during the pandemic may stay just because they worked out better rather than traveling halfway across the state for meetings. Why didn't we do Zoom 2 years ago? Why did we need a pandemic in order to start having Zoom meetings, to start having curbside delivery or grocery pickup? I think a lot of those things, if people like them, are going to be here to stay. It will be interesting to see online learning versus face-to-face learning, what people's preference will be a year from now or 2 years from now, because I think we found out that online learning is not for everyone. It may be more convenient in some situations, but that may not be how, some people best learn. So that will be interesting to see how those choices evolve. We still have the worry that the COVID will mutate a little bit and there'll be different strains, and how protected are we? Will it be like the seasonal flu and there'll be different variations of it? We're just going to have to be patient and be careful and wait and see what's going to happen.
I don't know. I think we've covered quite a bit here. I want to ask you, do you have anything more in general that you want to share that, things maybe you thought we would cover that we didn't cover that you want to bring up?
I can't think of anything else.
Yeah. Elise, do you want to chime in at all? Was there anything?
No, I think you covered all the important questions. So.
Yeah. Well, I think we're good then. It's been about an hour. That if we want to wrap things up, I really appreciate you, Tina, for setting aside time to meet with me and to look at the documents and to speak with us today and to contribute to this project. So I really appreciate that.
All right. Good luck with your project.
Yes. Thank you.
All right. You'll have to let me know how it all goes when you're done.
I will. And I'll get you'll get a copy of it, and I'll send you the transcripts as well to look at it. So we'll stay in contact.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Bye now.
I'm going to end the meeting then.
Okay.
All right. Bye.